AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
What's happening, y'all? This is Todd Wilson with another episode of Elevate Your Game. Today, we have former college scout team player from the University of Florida. We always have to have that basketball connection. Creative, innovator, designer. Man, this man is just a modern day black engineer. Like, he's doing his thing. Mr. Randall Yarbrough, man, welcome.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Welcome. We love to start the show off with the wall of hoop movies. Your favorite hoop movie of all time and why?
Yeah, I pick He Got Game. I think it was just interesting, just like seeing an actual NBA player, you know, acting.
Was he acting?
He was trying to. Right. He was trying to. I think he knew he did like an all right job. So I thought it was just like, it was like partial comedy, but also very serious because you have Denzel and you have Spike Lee backing it. Right. But I think it was just inspirational, just like a very interesting movie. And, you know, that's probably just like one that I held close to my heart.
What's your favorite part?
Oh, I don't know. Probably the little intro they had when they were on the court and all the players are like saying their name.
Yeah.
And I think that was probably it was kind of funny, but also it was just cool, like cinematic.
Right.
So it's probably that part.
Yeah. No, my favorite is the one-on-one scene still.
With the pops, yeah.
Yeah, I guess both of them when he was a kid and then when he got older, like kind of getting that revenge and that struggle. And I think we see that a lot in youth sports today, that struggle between the father and the kid. But he actually pushed him to a good level where some of these dads are making their kids hate basketball.
Yeah, so. Most likely because some of them aren't good. So.
But that's 100%. Like, his dad actually hooped.
It makes a difference.
He was just in state prison, so whatever. Yeah. But
oh, gosh.
It's all good. It's a movie. We love you, Denzel. Yeah, keep doing your thing. Pastor Denzel.
He's a pastor.
I think he got ordained. Yeah, he's getting ordained to be a minister at 75 years old.
All right, sir.
Crazy, right? All right, so when did you fall in love with basketball?
Ooh, growing up in Detroit, I think probably just being around, I grew up in the like early 90s. So when I was born, we had back-to-back with the Pistons. Mm-hmm. So just being there, that was probably the first love right there. And we had a little hoop in the driveway in the backyard. So it was like a duplex. So we were on one side, my big granny was on the other side, and then we had like a little backyard hoop. So probably around 4 or 5. And then, you know, you got the Pistons, you got Isaiah, you got Joe, just Vinny. So just a great team. But then also, I feel like Detroit is a place where sports is a big thing, and then basketball just made it even bigger. So,
yeah, no, absolutely. Is it? There's a certain culture that comes with Detroit basketball. Yeah. Do you think that was created by the Bad Boys at that time, or was it before that even, and we just didn't know?
I mean, Detroit's a hard city, like hard nose, like blue collar. So I do think that it came from the city in general, but the guys coming on the team, they saw how the city was, and they adapted that into their play. That's how I feel.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but like they saw how the city was, and they're like, you know what, this is how we're gonna play.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it was a different way, different time.
No, absolutely. That was different kind of basketball. Yeah. Like that level of toughness. Like, y'all definitely didn't call fouls growing up.
Huh? Nah. guys definitely not calling fouls at all.
We different on the West Coast, man. You foul me, I want my ball back.
Oh, I've noticed.
No, I wasn't allowed to call foul either. And so, growing up, what was your experience like in developing in basketball?
Just like in myself? Like the way I played?
Or like, yeah, did you have a trainer? Like, were you part of club teams? What was the rec team? Like, what was that?
Probably a lot of rec. And then probably just a lot of it, like, learning on my own. Mm-hmm. Like, my pops wasn't there, and my mom did not play sports. She was kind of like, I think she was a cheerleader when she was in high school. Mm-hmm. So I think the main thing was just me learning, like watching and learning, especially when I was in Detroit and I played rec ball. Mm-hmm. And then I started to develop more when I got to South Carolina. So okay. I left Detroit when I was 9, got to South Carolina, and I have two older god brothers, and they're both into basketball. So that dragged me into like playing and, you know, being better, getting beat up, like not beat up, you know, I'm talking about beat up on the court, roughed up on the court. That was probably where that development started happening. Cause I knew I had to I had to get better. Cause I'm not about to let them keep beating me on the court, you know, on that's Nintendo. That was probably my development.
Where's the why did you guys have to transition from Detroit to South Carolina?
It was just rough out there, man. It was rough in Detroit, and I think my mom wanted to move closer to her family because her family's in South Carolina. Dope. She was born in Florida, so her mom is from Florida. She's born in Florida, but she just wanted to get closer to her family. And Detroit was just rough. So we stay there any longer, you never know what could happen. So it was probably a smart move, but it was a decent transition.
Yeah. No, man, look at you now. True. So you know what I mean? Like it had to mean something. Like having your roots in a place that's, you know, rough and experiencing things when you're younger and being part of a single parent household, like that all comes with its own, I want to say traumas, but also experiences that build you into somebody different, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And so how did you use all those experiences before, you know, going to probably where it was a little calmer in South Carolina? Was there an adjustment period there? And do you even know how you use those experiences from growing up in a single parent household or in, from a rougher city and how it transitioned into your teenage years or so?
Yeah, I mean, definitely everything that I saw in Detroit, it was inspirational, but it was also like a clarity. Mm. So the inspirations would be the sports. Like I played hockey when I was a kid. So I watched the Red Wings play. I went to like their parades in the streets. I played myself, played t-ball, played basketball. I swam. My mom made me play golf.
Wow.
Like, I mean, I didn't have to play it at a high, you know, whatever. But tennis, everything I did a lot before I left Detroit. So before I left, I knew who I was, or at least I felt like I knew who I was. And it wasn't just the sports. It was the music. It was the architecture. Design, whether it's cars or fashion. And so the transition to South Carolina, it was easy. I felt like I was losing something, but also gained a lot too, like changing from pop to soda. But but I think it was a decent transition, not an easy one, but you know, you adapt. And being from Detroit, I feel like it was, you know, we just go anywhere and adapt. Not saying other people don't do that, but it's one of those things where I've been a bunch of different places, South Carolina, Florida, Rochester, New York. Like, I've been all over living-wise, and just being able to adapt has been something I carried with me since I was a kid. So that's probably, big one right there.
No, that's dope. That's dope. And then so from getting, you know, having older god brothers and, you know, kind of being, that's how I was raised too. My older cousin used to beat me up, and that's how I got good at basketball. I was like, I don't want them to beat me anymore.
Not no more.
Developing into that into middle school and high school. So what was your experience and, you know, how serious were you taking the game at that young age?
Ooh, I don't think I was taking it serious enough. Not as serious as I see, like, guys do now, like the youth, like I think they take it serious, whether it's them or their parents taking it serious. Like, you know, you have your mom, you know, she, again, like I said, she didn't play sports. So as serious as she, as I could take it without someone having like the guidance, I would say it was very like, if we do 1 out of 10, I'm gonna say a 5, yeah, maybe a 4. But it wasn't because I wasn't hungry to play. Like, I had played so many sports up until then. And this was like the first time I got to hone in on one sport. So, you know, I mainly played rec ball, and then I tried out for like the high school team or the middle school and the high school team. And I'm not tall now, but I wasn't tall then. And I was skinny. I was skinny, man. Like tiny. I didn't eat chicken on the bone. I was like, you gotta
break it up.
You gotta peel it up, man. Don't let the food touch. I was picky. So
yeah.
Development wise, it wasn't serious enough. It should have been more. At a certain point, I think in high school or right before high school, I got a lot more serious. I didn't do like training and stuff. I think it was mainly just like, you know, pick up and play with my godbrothers and stuff. And then there was a little bit of a switch where in ninth grade we had like summer camp for the high school. Yeah. And I'm there. I got like a 5-on-5 team, you get a 3-on-3 team, and you get like a one, like, you know, your personal shooting and stuff like that. Our 5-on-5 team won the championship. Mm. And so this is going into the ninth grade, and I'm like, oh, I didn't make the middle school team. I'm definitely about to make the high school team.
Yeah.
Because my team just won the championship. All the other kids that made it last year on the other teams, whatever, did not make it. Wow. Did not make it. Nah, it's crazy. It's crazy because that summer I won that 5-on-5, and then I won like MVP or something like that. So I had the accolades, and so I was thinking that would transition, just in transition. So
wow.
I think that little switch right there was like, okay, no more high school basketball. I'm done. I'm not doing this no more. So I went and just did a bunch of rec league and then AAU, but.
Oh, so you still play AAU without playing high school?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I mean, okay. I think back then it was just different. Like, you didn't have to be attached to a high school to still play AAU.
Yeah, you don't have to. You don't have to now.
Yeah, and true.
Some people actually suggest that sometimes. It's like, hey, just do AAU. You don't have to play high school. It happens in Texas, I hear. I know John Lucas is actually a fan of the John Lucas
really?
The Third. Yeah, he's like, man, just play AAU. What you got to play high school for? Like, you don't need it. Like, that's where you get recruited at, right?
That's true.
And so that's where the colleges are, so. And then through your, you know, AAU and development, like, because basketball took you places still.
Yeah,
right?
For sure. Yeah.
Without playing high school basketball, transition to AAU. And then having you on the show, right, it's always connected to hoop.
Yeah.
And I think it's important for people to see, because I think a lot of kids inspire to be where you are, as like as far as in that space, right?
Yeah.
To design products and shoes and all that kind of stuff. So where did that where was that birth? When did you fall in love with being a creative?
Back in Detroit. Like the architecture, the music, the fashion, everything started there. And then probably the very first thing would be, I mean, it was like 96, maybe 97 when the Air Jordan 12s dropped.
Mm.
And I remember being in school, like in Detroit, I went to this school called Detroit Urban Lutheran, and it was like PK or K through ninth grade, one single hallway, whatever. But I remember going into school, one kid had like two pairs of them, the white and blacks and the black and reds.
Wearing 1-on-1?
No,
I used to do that with the Iversons back in the day. I used to wear 1-on-1, you know?
Nah, he had both of the pairs that dropped, and I was like, damn, those things are so nice. Mm. I did that. It's damn a cuss word.
You can
scrap
speak
it.
Freely.
Can scrap
you can speak freely.
Okay,
you know,
yeah. He had them. I was like, damn, those are nice. That was the first time thinking, like, seeing footwear and being like, I really like the way those look, and I want those. And it's weird because that was probably my favorite shoe. Not because he was wearing them, just because I think at the time it was just like...
They're my favorite Jordans, too.
It's just a clean shoe.
Yeah, man.
And the concept behind it, the Japanese rising sun, everything. So I think it started then. But the transition to footwear didn't happen until like my last year of college, because I was doing architecture. My background's in architecture. So like 4 years of school doing architecture, and then that little switch happened. And that was a competition that made me like change going from architecture to footwear. So
And how relatable are those, like the architecture piece? All right, it's all design and engineering, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so it was a good direct relation. You were able to merge this passion that formal education.
Right? Yeah, it's small scale architecture. I say it, I mean, I don't say it all the time, but when I do talk to
LeBron,
people, like,
no, I say it all the time.
It's like, I know the lyrics, though. Right. I know all the lyrics. Yeah, no, like, it is. It's small scale architecture. It's like, it's housing for the foot. Mm-hmm. So instead of building this entire space for you to dwell in, to walk through, transition through, whatever, we're building something that you're able to walk in, to transition in, to run in, to do all these things. And I don't know, it's just more personable. It's beautiful. People, you buy it for a reason. Like, you can throw on like a t-shirt and jeans and stuff, but I think a lot of people take a little bit more pride into their shoes, especially nowadays.
Yeah.
Not just us, like everyone.
Everybody. Oh, for sure.
Everyone.
For sure.
So, yeah, that transition happened end of college, but it was a big shift for me.
That's dope. Yeah. And then how did you become? So you go to the University of Florida.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Yep. You finished AAU, and did you have like hoop dreams to hoop in college or anything? Or where did those end, and how did that transition to you becoming a part of the scout team for University of Florida?
I had a little bit of hoop dreams. Nothing too crazy, but I wasn't gonna like bank my like schooling, like choose school or choose basketball over school basically.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm just gonna go to school, and then I'll just play pickup. Yeah. I'll play rec ball with everybody else. And I was doing that, and then one of my boys, like when I was at Florida, he's like, yo, you should come play scout team with us. And I was like, that's cool, yeah, I'm down. Because we had just won a national championship.
This is Billy Donovan?
Yeah, this is Billy Years.
With Corey Brewer.
Yeah, Joe Kim. Yeah, like Al.
Yeah.
But they were leaving that summer. So I graduated in June, and I had to start school in July because we had early, I had like a summer B enrollment, early enrollment. But yeah, like that transition was interesting just because you want to hoop. Like, you definitely want to hoop still, but it's like these boys, they want to hoop more. Like,
you see the difference, right? And it's important because people have love for this game.
Yeah.
Like it, I'm going to say, right?
Yes, they like it.
Or even say they love it, but they don't understand what goes into it and what's on the other side, especially when you're in a smaller space like LA. It's the opposite, right?
Yeah,
we see the best of the best, and some people are just like, yo, I can't be that good.
Yep.
But they don't understand there's so much basketball across this country at different levels where, hey, there's a place for you if you just grind and do this the right way. And then you have that small town mindset where it's like, you don't know what's out there, so you think you good coming from your city.
Exactly.
Until you see Joakim Noah.
Yep.
And then you change your mind about basketball existence.
No, that's true. I mean, I think it was still amazing though, just going there and just experiencing it. So what Billy did, instead of like, we had just won the national championship back to back. So that summer, he was just like, I'm just gonna have 15 guys in general. Mm-hmm. So he had his 15 players. Most of them are, you know, they're scholarship, and you have like a few guys that aren't. So he had us doing coaching clinics and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then most of our focus was with women's basketball. And even for me, like, as much as you guys think that women's basketball isn't real.
Man, let them know.
just go try to take one of those picks. If they're not just like, they're not weak.
They're athletes.
They are strong.
Yes.
No. So we had a guy on the team. And, you know, granted, he was like 5'6". He took a charge from one of the players, and he fell. He got up. We finished practice. Next day, we come back. He's nowhere to be found.
Is he alive?
He's alive. Okay, he's alive. Cool, okay. Yeah, he's alive. He's alive. He's alive. I won't say no names or anything like that. But the next, maybe like a week or two later, we see him at a game, but he's a cheerleader.
Change that man's whole life.
And that takes way more time.
Right.
We were just going to practice. We didn't have to do individual practice. Right. We didn't have to do weightlifting. Didn't have to do nutrition. Like, you just come to practice and hoop. But for cheerleading, you got a lot more to do.
That's a commitment.
So the pick changed his direction. Somebody should have yelled left.
Nobody called the screen.
I don't think. It wasn't me either. So.
Call screens or your friends may become a whole different career path. Let's just say it like that.
And he wasn't tumbling. He wasn't a flipping chili or nothing. He was just.
My God. So. Hilarious. Hilarious. I love it. So you did that all 4 years of college?
The last 2 years. The last two years.
Okay. Dope.
The first two, I was trying to focus on architecture. Because, when I got there, because I came in that early summer B, I was under a program that they had for people underprivileged students. And, but you have the grades, you have everything, but they do it so you can transition into the college life. So, it was just one of those things where I was like, let me focus on school because I was technically undeclared. So I didn't have a major.
Gotcha.
So every time I would go into my studio class for architecture, because you can't just pick a bunch of classes in architecture. You need to be
one path.
All of it architecture and stuff like that. And then you have those first 2 years before you go into upper division, which make it really difficult. Because if you don't pass upper division, you have to start all over again. Not just for architecture. You have to, all those classes you took don't really go towards anything else.
Oh, wow.
So it's like you're starting back over again. But
so you didn't have to do that, though.
I did not do that. I passed PNOP. Yeah, it was no issue. But the first 2 years, I had professors that would be like, Randall Yarbrough? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, oh, are you still undergrad or you want to be architecture? Mm-hmm. I was like, I think I'm here still. Right. It's my second year, buddy.
Trying to get you out?
Yeah, architecture was like trying to be a part of a fraternity or sorority.
Really?
The professors were they were on you.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I'm wearing all black. It's a normal thing there. It's faded black though. This is vintage black.
See, this is the design stuff I know nothing about. I have a blue hoodie on and gray sweats. They go together because I got gray sweats. And they may not. I was gonna say. So, all right, so talk about that transition, learning, being an architect major. I'm calling you an architect major. Forget undeclared, right?
That's perfect.
And transitioning into the shoe side. What went off? What triggered?
Literally a competition.
Okay.
So last year of college, I'm just looking around the internet, trying to figure out what I want to do, what grad school I want to go to for architecture. And I see this, it's called Future Soul. It was a Jordan Brand Future Soul competition, just t-shirt designs. And I was like, I think I can do that. That sounds fun. Let me just throw some stuff together. So we had to do one that was for Jordan Brand, something that had to relate to Michael Jordan. So I did a design, sent it in, and then I qualified and everything like that. And then basically to sprint through it, I became a semifinalist with another person. Oh. And so it was a worldwide competition. So it was a lot of people entering in. And for the semifinalists, we did just a bunch of designs for Melo. And this is when Melo had just got to New York for the Knicks. And so I'm designing a bunch of stuff, trying to figure out what t-shirt graphics look fire and stuff, prepping myself to go to Portland, to go to Nike campus. And I get there, and there's not just us doing our t-shirts, there's people doing footwear, and they're about to present it. And I'm like, I love footwear. Mm. I like Nike. I love Jordan. I can do that.
Dope.
So that was the That was the switch. And I did win. I won. Yeah.
You still have that design?
It's somewhere, yeah.
Let's find it and send it to Korean. I would love to just,
I can find it, yeah.
So you won that competition.
Won that competition.
Inspired by the footwear that was in that competition.
Yeah,
as
it was inspired. Yeah, it's, the footwear was like amazing. Those guys are actually all over the place now. Like one's at Nike, another one's at New Balance. One is like he's an artist, crazy artist. Like so we, you know, that group of people. Not only did they inspire me then. They're still doing it. Yeah. And we're like, you know,
there's a program that you went to?
Yeah, it was called Pensole. Pensole is what it's called now. It's a Pensole Lewis College in Detroit, Michigan. So now instead of it being like a program that was a part of Nike, Dr. Dwayne Edwards, like he took it from being a program at Nike to it being his own school in Portland. This is the black man, a great black man that has helped a lot of us get into footwear and stay into footwear. And now he's in Detroit with the HBCU called Pensole Lewis College. And I mean, they're changing lives for people. Like it may change mine. So like,
so yeah. And you can do this as an undergrad as well?
Undergrad, you can do it as a high school student.
So somebody who's looking to get into shoe design, this is your shoe game and this is what you're about. That's what you look into with Cornell.
Yes. Yep, Pensole Lewis College, HBCU. Everybody is welcome. Like,
and so, you were in Portland when you did.
I was in Portland.
It didn't
send
you back to Detroit.
No,
that would have been crazy too, though. But yeah,
I've been on the campus though, and it's amazing. So it's beautiful to see growing up there, and knowing that you have the opportunity to, because now it's not just footwear, it's apparel, it's fashion,
right?
Fashion apparel. They do marketing, they do color and materials, so. It's a place where people are going to be able to create in totality. It's like what you say with basketball, where your direction in basketball doesn't stop just because you're not hooping anymore.
Mm.
There's so many other things you can do that don't involve you being on the court.
Yep.
So it's the same thing in footwear and design.
That's dope.
Yeah.
And so, all right, so this is all happening your senior year of college-ish.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, so I saw that you... Did you go right into designing shoes or you had a step before that?
Yeah, I had a step before that. So like I went to Rochester Institute of Technology up in Rochester, New York. And I was thinking to myself, like, I need to learn more about industrial design. I do think though that as an architecture student, we can transition into like a bunch of different stuff, footwear, furniture, apparel. Like we have the building blocks to then take us into other things. But I just wanted to do it just for my own sanity. But after I graduated from RIT, I went back to South Carolina.
Okay.
I was there for like 6 months working at my church's daycare, like after school care, like helping out the students and stuff. But it's mainly because I couldn't find a job. Like that's literally
it was
what
tough
it was.
Finding a job in architecture.
Yeah.
After architecture, getting your master's degree?
Yeah, yeah. Architecture, industrial design. It was just hard because you're like a junior designer, so a lot of places want you to be already located where they're at.
Mm.
So if I'm in South Carolina, they're not.
Right.
You know. So things happened and I actually, after being there 6 months in South Carolina, I went to LA. I came out here. My godbrothers were here, the ones I was hooping with. And they're like, yeah, just come out here, sleep on the couch, and figure it out.
Were they hooping still?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, they weren't. But yes, but no.
Gotcha.
They can still hoop. Yeah, they can still hoop. Like they.
Yeah. They didn't come out here to hoop though.
No, they didn't come out here to hoop.
Gotcha.
And I'm better than both of them. And I hope they watch it.
Message.
They have kids, so they don't get to play as much anymore.
I love it. All my cousins know. They already know. They be sending me messages like, the reason that you are who you are is because we made you. That's what they say now. Like, yeah, you only good because we used to give you buckets. And so I'm like, yeah, you're right. It's the truth. But hey, look at you now.
Yeah.
Okay. We take this too serious to let anybody slide. All right. So you came to LA.
Yep.
Took a leap of faith.
Yeah. Yeah. For a month. And then I got, I got opportunity down in Carlsbad, San Diego, with Skills. So like sports performance, training equipment, basketball, baseball, soccer, golf, football, just like designing everything. And mainly, you know, it's from scratch. It's from an idea. It's from like, you know, them giving us a problem and us finding a way to solve it. Because a lot of the stuff that we were designing, it wasn't on the market yet. And this is in 2014. So I was there from 2014 to 2018. And like during that span, you know, they had like Pro Mini Hoop and they had like the D-Man Defender. Like they had, there was a lot of things that they had, but just had to like find ways to take it from elementary, like training, elementary, middle school. I don't want to be too rude, but to like, you know, true high school hoopers or true high school players, athletes, college, professional. That was like their goal by bringing like myself in and bringing in like engineers and designers to really build that up. Yeah, that was a big 4 years of my life for sure.
Yeah, you know, you have a couple patents that you created from those products and products that we all use.
Yeah.
The D-Man Pro, right? Whatever, I saw the ladders, the
agility shape ladders. Yeah, the agility ladders.
So what was your biggest product? From skills, that, like sales wise, and
I would have to look. It's probably the Agility Pro, the ladder that you're talking about. Yeah. That probably was like the biggest one. And then also there was like a 6X hurdle. That was probably one of the products I got to work on with another designer. He was like our senior designer there, because at the time when I got there, it was only two of us, from a design perspective, and then like three and four engineers. So I got to work on a lot of projects as like an assistant, like helping out. Mm-hmm. And that 6X hurdle was probably be one of those that just, you see it everywhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, for sure. It's like a little short one. It's one single.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
A piece of molded.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
wow. Yellow. Yeah, that one's pretty nice. But I would say the Agility Pro is probably like my number one.
How does it work creatively? Like, is it, this is the problem, let me fix it, and then you build the product from, hey, this is what I have to fix. And then it's just imagining and seeing what already exists. Like, what is that process like creating a solution to a problem? When it comes to footwear to, you know, I guess training equipment.
Yeah. I mean, it is definitely solving problems. Like, how do we come up with a solution to whatever issue the marketing person gives us? Or like with footwear, when I was doing footwear stuff, like, you know, we have this idea, like I want to do outdoor, like now figure it out. Sometimes it was open, left open, blank like that. Mm. And then sometimes it was like a real solution for even things like, I did a soccer defender before I left skills. And for that one, most of those soccer defenders are like, they're like 6 feet, maybe a little bit taller, but they're stiff plastic. And they have spikes and they don't fold down or close down. So you got to have a truck to like haul them around. So the marketing guy was like, hey, like I need something that folds down. And if you think about it, these guys are kicking soccer balls pretty fast at this thing. So how do you really get something that, you know, answers what he's asking for? So a lot of it was just problem solving, like that's problem solving design. And that was probably that one right there was one of the most difficult ones, just because we're trying to create, give it 6 foot stature, but then drop it down to like 3 feet.
Right.
So to then carry away. Yeah. But that one was cool. I think I have a patent for that one, but that one's probably the best one. And I don't even know if that answered the question.
It did. No. It did. It's, you know, I'm a visionary and I have good ideas, but that process and the steps to get to where I need to get to is like, that's why I Korean has been a big blessing to me. It's like, yo, let's do a podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, well, let me paint the walls. Oh, all right. Like, that wall, it's a white wall. That's not good enough? Like, no, that's ugly. Like, you know, just everything in this room, you know, it's like, Karina thought of it. Well, actually, you know what? I thought of the jerseys. Thank you very much. I did a piece. Okay. So, but everything else is like, oh, let's paint. I'm going to paint the balls different colors.
What? Yeah, I like that.
Like that. You know, so it's like that part of it, I don't care about. Yeah. Like, just like literally, I'm like, yeah, just do you, whatever. But I have that visionary piece of like, yo, this needs to look like a professional basketball space. What does that look like? And so, like, collabing with creative people is a gift. Like, it opens my mind to this whole other world that I don't care about innately, but I care about now because I see what it's done.
Yeah.
People are like the people who own this place, like, mm-hmm. he brings people by to look in here. It's the only studio that's really built. Oh no, they have another one that's built out, but they bring people by and like, oh, that's amazing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So, oh no, and the table was my idea too.
You guys, I like the table. So. I like the table.
Because I came up with the idea that
the hoops, you did that?
Yes. I was like, if you turn them in physically.
She did, okay. All right, so yes. Karina helped with the table.
But yeah, this is fire, I like this a lot.
No, but I think it's this is dope, man, that creative side that, you know, I'm the on the other end of it. So
yeah,
I always like to hear that process. So did a great job at Skills. You built patents, products, a lot of success, kind of found your niche for creating in a way. And then you get your opportunity to hop into the fashion side.
Yeah.
So talk about that.
Yeah, that was like a big blessing because like for the 4 years I was at Skills, different footwear companies would hit me up and they would fly me to interview and stuff like that. And a lot of times they're interviewing me for something that they almost, I don't want to say they knew that I wasn't, that they felt like I wasn't the right person, but they just wanted to bring me in, which I don't have any. Like,
were you applying for these?
I wasn't applying. Most of them I wasn't applying for.
How were you getting these opportunities?
They would just find me they'd be like, hey, like, you know, this team is looking for a footwear designer. Want to bring you up and have a conversation. So I did that with like, I think I did Adidas, for the last one, and then Brooks. And it was like, you know, it's cool to go up there, but if you're not getting anything, you're like,
yeah. Shout out to my unks who rock Brooks, by the way, man. It's okay for your feet to be comfortable. Don't let people judge you.
Go ahead. Absolutely. You see what it's doing for ASICS.
Right.
Hey. But this time, one of my close friends, actually that I met at Pencil during that time, I was there for the Future Soul. She was like, "Hey, like, we have a position open. Would you wanna join our team?" And I was like, "Yeah, absolutely." She's like, "But it's based in Calabasas," and I was like, "Yeah, I mean, I don't care. I live in California. Like, let's do it." Obviously, it's not like you're gonna just get the job just because somebody, because that's just not how it works, especially at a big company like Adidas. But it helps when someone vouches for you. So I still went up to Calabasas, had the interview. It was for a technical footwear designer. Mainly, so like what that is like somebody who does blueprints for like this, like the sole and like the outsole and stuff like that. So when they would create something, I would then go blueprint it like I would back in architecture or even when I was at Skills.
I was actually good at that. I took a CAD class in high school and I won a competition.
Oh, really?
With my CAD drawings. Yeah, I was really, I still have the folder. Like, because I won first place. Like, I the dude was like, yeah, you need to submit something. I was nice with it. I made some like 3D geometrical piece with the blueprint. Yeah, I was nice with it. But
let them know.
But then there was basketball. I was like, yeah, I'm not going to
submit. Yeah, I don't want to do blueprints. So.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, so went up there, had the interview, and it was like a step backwards because I was about to be a senior designer at Skills. So, you know, I was already working on, you know, mentoring another designer and then also trying to figure out, like, you know, how many projects I was going to be handling. And, you know, for the most part, we were handling a lot of products there. So yeah. You had a bunch of products and projects that you were working on. You know, it could be 10 at a time or whatever. Right. And then so I was like, yeah, let's have the interview. But during the interview, I just wanted to make it very clear with them. I was like, hey, look, like, this is a step back, but in a year, I want to be a footwear designer. Because if I'm doing technical footwear, this is a nice way to learn the way that you all operate. and support, but I then want to support in another way. And I think, you know, that being upfront with it, I think they, you know, some people be like, oh, like, you know, oh yeah, for sure. Well, of course, we'll get you a forward designer role after a year, buddy. But I think they took it fairly serious. Like, you know, they took it seriously, not only allowing me to do the work that I was supposed to be doing, but also, you know, tampering and a bunch of other things because they knew that I'm a creative and I have that side. So it was beneficial to like voice that before I just kind of sat there, like closed mouths, definitely do not get fed.
I think it's so important that people understand how to advocate for themselves. Like, because you are taking, like, some people won't take that lower position. Yeah. Like, oh, my value is more and that's not what I want to do. But how you had the confidence to step in there and say what you wanted and present it as part of the job offer. Like, hey, this is a negotiation. I think that's what people don't understand when they're getting an offer for a job. It's a literal negotiation. There's a contract behind your work that you have the power to influence if you know how to say it and position yourself. And I think that's so important. Always connected back to basketball, right? Yeah. A lot of people go overseas and play. Like, that is a negotiation. Absolutely. They can't just tell you what it is. And it's not like you go, you know, they're offering you $50,000. You're like, no, I need $100,000. No, you can't do that. But you can say, all right, awesome. But I also want my meals taken care of. Yep. I want to make sure I have flights back home. I want to make sure my family can come see me for one game. There's negotiations within that contract.
Yeah.
And so if you are taking a position that you feel is lower than your, you know, what you're worth, there's a purpose in it. And so I think that was, man, that was extremely important that that you did that. So that's dope.
Yeah, I'm happy you always tie it back into basketball because then, like, if somebody's, for sure. If somebody's watching, they can, it's like a translation for them, like, easy translation. But it's true, though. Like, you have to negotiate. If you don't, then you're going to end up being there. Whether you're working, playing, you're going to be sitting there thinking, like, oh, man, what? I could have got X, Y, and Z, but I didn't actually want to say it because I was scared. Yeah. But if they offer you the job or if they offer you the opportunity, that means they want you. So you speaking up and asking for a little bit more, probably not gonna be that much. It's not gonna be a big issue. So,
Are you a part of any NDA or can you talk about the products you developed at Adidas? I just wanna make sure we're
clear. No, my NDAs are good.
Okay, great. So you're working for Adidas in Calabasas, right? Who were you working for and what were you creating?
Yeah, I was working for Yeezy. I was there 2018 until 2023. And then after that, like, I was working with him for last year, 2024. But while I was there, I got to work on like 1050. It's like the big orange boot. 1050 insulated boot. It's like the big brown puffy boot. Did also, what is it? Knit basketball, did like the concept and everything for it, and then had another teammate. Like, we worked in a way where it's like it's supposed to be team oriented, and it was, you know, sometimes. But so like in that knit basketball one, like I did like the sketch and the first like sampling and creation of the tech pack and stuff, and then I had to hand it over to another teammate to like take it through.
I want to dig into this teammate thing you're talking about. Once again, because we could tie it back to basketball. Said, you know, there's always a perfect time to pass the ball to your teammate, right? So they can do what they're called to do, you know, play their role. In a position where you are creative, right? Mm-hmm. And you created something from the base, right? With the goal of it looking like this at the end and seeing it through. How difficult is it to pass it off and trust that your teammate is going to do what they're supposed to do with it?
It's hard. It's hard. And it has nothing to do with the person.
Yeah.
It's more so just like you've created this object. Somebody else sees it as an object. You see it as like your baby. And then you're like, well, you know, just so you understand, like, you got to feed it like, you know, every 2 hours. And also it doesn't like to be held that, oh, okay. And by the time you've handed it over, you're like, you can't, but you shouldn't. It's fine. I'm not in the meeting. You're right. Mm-hmm. So it is very difficult to pass the ball. It's just hard. Like, you know, I'm not saying you're trying to be Kobe or, you know, MJ. because you probably aren't Kobe or MJ, but
right.
You do, you feel that way. It's probably one of the hardest things to do, but you just gotta trust the other person, and also they have to trust you as well, because that, you know, you're obviously there, and it's just like basketball. You're practicing, you're sketching, you're practicing like the way that you want to communicate to your teammates and to the factory, and I think it's really important to understand, like, to be able to take a step back and allow somebody to breathe life into what you've created. So, but it is very, very difficult. I mean, it's like being a coach. Coach, you ride the plays, but how is your point guard gonna, you know, share it on the court? Yep. How are they gonna run it? Did they set that pick right? Did they do that DOH right?
Right.
Oh no,
DHO. Oh, Chris.
I'm just saying. edit.
edit.
delete.
With that, what is it like being a part of such a legendary brand, right? That impacted culture and impacted fashion on a whole different level, right? Being a part of that. That's the bigger picture, right?
Like, yeah.
You don't get all the things that you want from it.
Yeah.
But you know that you are a part of something very special.
Yeah.
What does that do for you and your confidence and your trajectory for what you're going to do next?
Yeah, it's massive. Just because not only the people that you get to associate with when you're working and creating, but also, like at the end of the day, you know, I think for the most part, I know we're not here to talk about him, but like misunderstood a lot of times. But I think just the way that he works is brilliant in the sense of, and again, this is hard to do. You bring a bunch of people in, you bring a bunch of all-stars in, and you kind of coach them, right? Like this, cause that's what happens. Like it's an incubation. Yeah. You're bringing a bunch of creatives, people that might be creating their own brands already, or people that have aspirations to create their own brand. So it was extremely beneficial, not only personally, but also like for everyone else, for the, you know, for what we were doing. And it definitely, you know, could have stayed that way if we were all on the same page, not just him, just like as a group, if we all had that same like common goal. We did, but it's still like individualized.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, but I would say at the end of the day, it was one of the best experiences I've had. And it was 6.5, 7.5 years of my life, from Adidas to even transitioning to just being Yeezy. So things I would never take away just because I learned a lot. And you get to kind of fail fast, where you just like you're going full steam on something, and you might take it off the tracks, but at the end of the day, you're like, oh, that's cool. Like, oh, the tracks are still there. Like, I'm back on now. I'm good.
Yeah.
If you saw what he did, like what he was able to do, just across like different creations and different models, in the way that people adapted to them. Why, we're not going to see that happen.
Why do you think that happened? Do you think that happened because of who he is, or do you think that happened because of, like you said, how he approaches his work?
I think it has to do with who he is. Like, I mean, also the way that he works. I mean, if you bring so many different creatives in, and you, I'll say it like this. Like, this is one thing that he definitely does, and I've seen it happen not only when I was at Adidas, when it was just Yeezy. He'll bring like 10 creatives in, give them the same objective, same problem, same references, whatever, and see like what they come back with. And you would expect them to come back with different things, right? But a lot of times they come back with very similar things with a slight twist because of who they are. And I think that's a nice little way of being able to like, you know, kind of see that small change of what you were thinking. and then it just being like displayed in what product form or Photoshop form, whatever. Like he did that at Adidas, did it at Yeezy, like when we were just like, just, you know, no backing. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting, like we even had a team where it was three of us that were in America designing, and then there was like some people in Europe. And so we had already had a bunch of creations, not only from Adidas, but from recently when we were just with the three of us and him sketching and creating. They presented their ideas to us as if they were new, and they weren't. They were new concepts of an idea that he already had. And so we looked, we were looking through them, and we were like, it was like speechless. You're like, I know sometimes he'd be, you know, saying stuff, and you're like, all right, another one of these. But you looked at them, and you're like, somehow, some way, when it comes to design, his communication is still similar. And he's not sketching anything for them to see. He's not giving them our references. He's giving them references from life, from nature, whatever it may be. And somehow they still came up with the same exact things with just like
little tweaks.
Minor tweaks.
That's crazy.
So it's him. It's the way he thinks, the way he communicates, even though, again, some of those things, when it's outwardly towards politics and right. other things, it's not comprehended well, or it's not even explained well. But I think in the design space,
yeah,
he does it well.
100%. Man, that's so dope, man. I'm really big on your circle, right? Yeah. Being around people who are going to elevate you, right? Yeah. And you got to experience somebody who has innovated and changed cultures, right?
Yeah.
That is my belief, is that what we're here to do, right? Like within our purpose, we're here to inspire people, encourage them to point them to back to our creator, right? Yeah. How have you learned from that experience? Not just with Yay, but with anybody you've been in this space, right? And how do you use that now for what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing, not even one thing, I think a lot of it is mainly just like, I am one of those people that if I'm in a space, I like to just sit back and let things play out. Like I'll listen, try to take everything in, especially if it's a new space. And then when I speak, at least it's not like, you know, this guy's been talking this whole time, like he has to shut up. It's one of those things where you like, I'm just like, take it in. And then when you speak, it should be a lot more powerful than you just blurting out a bunch of stuff. So being in the space with him, being in the space with all these other people, I've been able to sit back and learn. And, you know, one thing from Yeezy, at least, is just seeing the understanding of like how well things could work if everybody's working together and creating together in whatever capacity or whatever direction you're trying to do, and being able to bring in people for specific things because that's what they're good at.
Yeah.
And being able to like acknowledge that, like even for my brand, like try to take a step back and allow somebody to create in the way that they would create for a specific thing, because I trust myself, but there's always somebody else out there can do it better if that's not your, you know, that's not your thing. So that's one thing, like being able to open up and allow other people to like kind of pour into your blessing or pour into like what you're doing. And then also all the knowledge that you learn, it's not that great if you don't share it back to other people. If you're not going back and teaching people or sharing it with other people, it's just like, why do you have it?
Man. Talk to the basketball trainers out there. Once again, man, that's so profound, especially in our space. It looks like it goes on in every space, right? That when you're confident and you're good, there's no reason not to share because you can't be duplicated.
Yep.
You can be copied. People can try to copy you. Like, I'm an open book when it comes to pretty much everything in my life, to be honest. But especially with basketball, it's like somebody taught me this. It wasn't like I just inherited this from like, you know, anywhere. Like, oh, I just know basketball. Yeah. No, I had people who taught me. And so I got to be that blessing back without wanting anything back either, exactly. right? And there's a way to protect yourself, right? You have, you know, copyright, trademarks, and patents to protect yourself from those who don't know how to value your information the correct way. So protect yourself for sure, but also don't be afraid to share with others so they can impact, right? Our goal is to impact as many people as possible while we're here with the gift that God has given us, whether it's in creating, coaching, speaking, whatever it is, right? And so, man, let's talk about Joy Shed, man. Yo, here's the socks, but basketball shorts, man, this is your own brand.
Yeah.
Man, talk about the brand itself, the title. Love the hoop shorts.
Yeah, man. That was dope.
So, yeah, talk about your own brand, man.
Yes, I mean, I started back in 2019, like just creating the idea of like, what do I want to do? Because, you know, again, being at Yeezy, being at Adidas, you're pouring, or being at Skills, what doesn't matter, you're pouring all your design and your creativity into someone else and into another brand, which is not a bad thing. But like you just said, protect yourself. So just like I said, how Ye would bring in a lot of people, those people had their own things. Like there was guys like Willie Chavarria. Yeah, Willie Chavarria. I think that's how you pronounce his name. Don't quote me and don't hate me.
We'll correct it. The correct spelling would be here.
Yes, perfect. Jound, I mean, ERL from Eli. He's like based in Venice. There's just entire studios. There's a bunch of different brands and people who have gone through Yeezy or whatever. And I think seeing people do that made me say, oh, I need something of my own, because he was bringing them while they were already creating they're already creating their stuff. Mm. So somehow he respects them. They also respect themselves to come in and help.
Right.
So in my head, I was like, well, I want to have my own creative outlet. I want to have something that's just mine. And Joy Shed is one of those things. And so for the name, like I said, grew up in Detroit, moved to South Carolina. And I grew up on Joy Road in Detroit, West Side to be exact. And then moved to South Carolina, and I lived on our first house they ever had was on Hollingshed. And so it took some time to get to a naming, because like most people just like, oh, I'll just use my name, or I'll use like, you know, Vintage House or something just random that there's no connection. But I was like, I'm not doing anything with my name attached to it that's not like super personal, and that is not exactly who I am. You know, just it has to mean something. It can't just be so I can make money, because that's not what I do want to make money, of course.
Right.
But it's more so just about like creating impact and having the freedom to create. So that's where I created Joy Shed. And I started with the shorts because basketball. I love basketball, and I'm always gonna love basketball. And so I was thinking like, what is that one piece that if I were to create that I've worn all my life is shorts. I'm sure all of us have had like, what, 300 pairs of shorts in the span of our lives. I mean, I probably still have somewhere around there that I need to also give away that are not part of the brand. They're just other things. So that's where I started, but I'm transitioning into creating more things like, you know, t-shirts and sweats and hoodies and stuff like that.
I'm waiting for the hoodie.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the hoodie. I'm a hoodie guy. Like, if you have a crew neck, come out, whatever, man.
I'm gonna have a few things. Yeah. And then I'll transition to like very small pieces where it's like less and less, because I'm not trying to just like overpopulate, you know, creation of things. I want to make it for things that I actually love and have a reasoning and a, you know, backing to why I'm making it.
Part of the story.
Yeah.
I
was telling Karina, it's like I could go to China and I could make shorts and sell them for $50, but I want to make everything in America. We don't have good manufacturing. Our infrastructure for manufacturing is very, very low. So that's why we have to depend on like a China, Vietnam, which is not a bad thing. But now if we have a bad relationship with them and we're adding on tariffs and stuff, then it could come become tricky. But everything that I do is like manufactured in the USA. So I'm trying to keep that for as long as I can. It's not easy, but it's worth it.
Yeah. Absolutely, man. It's excited to see what comes from your brand, from your story, and for all the inspiring apparel entrepreneurs out there, what's the advice that you would give them? You know, just creating their first piece, right? I think there's so much in between. I've had a lot of friends who ventured into this space, and it's like there's so much that people don't know about. They think they could just go put a logo on a piece of clothes and like, oh yeah, I'm good, and sell it. Like, yeah, that's probably not gonna sell. So what's the advice that you have for those people who want to venture into that space? There's a lot of basketball, especially young basketball players who love this space. I need you to come and talk to my kids in my program, really, so they can understand. So what's your advice to them?
I think it's taking the time to understand exactly what you want to do first. You don't have to map it out perfectly, but taking the time to understand what you want to display, share with the world, etc. Because you're right, a lot of people do just like, they'll get a blank t-shirt, they'll throw the logo on it, and they'll sell it, which is fine, but that only lasts for so long. It's like you're setting yourself up to be a part of a trend versus like giving like a direction for people to follow. And like even with like this t-shirt, like it doesn't have my logo on it or anything right now, but even this t-shirt is my design, it's my pattern. It's not a blank that I got and then got dyed and I threw a logo on it. Like I went and I sketched it, I put it in Illustrator, went to the factory, made sure it was like exactly what I wanted. You know, they make their cotton here in America. So it's like, there's more steps to it. So you just finding and figuring out exactly what you want to do and then just testing it out. Because that's like the biggest thing. Like people have ideas, they don't test them out, or they do, whatever. But then they stop. They stop at that like 70% and they don't put anything out. So the next biggest thing is like just getting it out there, testing the waters. Because you're like, I'm never going to score 20 a game. Well, did you try?
Right. Did you shoot at least 10 shots?
Did you break down the math and see like how many points a quarter that is? How many shots a quarter that is?
Yeah.
You know, what your percentage would look like? Oh, did I get to the foul line? Like there's a lot to it that you can talk about it. You can, say it and test it out. But that next hurdle is actually just like really just going out there and testing the waters. And that's even what I'm doing right now. Like, I put out just shorts, just shorts, and that's it, and then socks, but that's it, that's on the website. So a lot of times people will be like, oh, but you don't have nothing else?
Low-key, no I clicked on the link, so I was like, oh, he just got shorts. I said, bet. I guess I'm going to figure out these shorts then, but I thought the same thing.
Yeah, they want an outfit. They want an outfit, and I've taken so much time to then create the next pieces that typically most people would already have. They would have like 10 shirts with 10 different logos on it, pants, hoodies, and jackets and stuff. But I'm just trying to, take the time to put it out there and put it out respectfully. Like, I don't want it to be something where people get it and they don't like it, or they think that I just like rushed it. Mm-hmm. So I think that's like the next biggest thing too, is just like being patient with yourself, because it's not easy. But once you get over the hurdle to put it out there to the world, are you patient enough to like sit back and see if it will work out?
Yeah.
And it goes back to like basketball.
Yeah, man. I was going to say, man, you were talking about hooping, man. Like through and through is just the process, right? Yeah. Everybody says trust the process, and that's it, is having that long suffering, understanding that it's not going to click right away. And it's the biggest piece with the parents right now. It's like, how's my kid doing every week? Like, bro, I don't know. I can't tell. I see them every day. You don't know when your kid gets taller until you measure them.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because I see them all the time. Like, I tell them, like, hey, ask me every 4 months. I'll let you know how good your kid's doing. Because the work he's doing now, we're not going to see it. Not even 4 months. We won't see it for probably another year.
Yeah.
Because of the detail that's put into it, the thought that's put into the training, and are they doing it the right way? Are they really committed to this? And so, man, that's life, right?
Yeah.
Is that we just have to trust that process and keep putting the work in consistently, daily, and looking at our long-term, short-term goals and keep on reflecting and building it better. And all those things will get us to success.
Yep.
Whether it's success how you thought it would look or how it's supposed to look. And I think that's the biggest thing. So,
yeah.
No, it's dope. Where's the inspiration for the thumbprint come from?
Oh, I tried a bunch of different things for like a logo, and I'm not like a graphic artist, even though I did those t-shirts for like Future Soul and stuff. But it was just thinking about like, okay, what represents me? What represents like people? What would people click with? And so at first I started with my, just like a regular thumbprint. It doesn't look good. it looks good, but it doesn't translate onto products that well. You can't really see it and stuff like that. So unless it's like a screen print, but I did a bunch of stuff before that. And then I got to the thumbprint because I was like, oh, well, you know what? If I want to put my, like my touch on everything, because I'm doing this by hand, I'm, you know, sometimes I will sew some stuff up to figure out like, does this look correct or does this pattern work? So I was like, okay, let's do something that has to do with like me actually touching the product. So then I finally got to a point where I did the thumbprint. I tried some stuff and it wasn't working with like the screen printing or testing out puff print. And then I went back and I filled in, you know, filled it in a little bit more and tried to like, you know, create larger shapes out of like the, you know, the thinner pieces. And I got to this like organic shape of this thumbprint. But the interesting thing is like when people see it now, I've had people say different things when they ask me about it. And I was like, yeah, you know, the first time I said, I was like, yeah, I'm like, I'm, you know, me trying to touch the product, create something by hand, et cetera. And somebody was like, oh yeah. I mean, it's also like, you know, the other people that touch the product too in the creation process. And I was like, oh, I didn't really think about that. So everybody else has their DNA on the product throughout the creation cycle. You have someone, you know, creating the material, they're dyeing the material, they're somebody shipping it, they're sewing it, that, you know, they're stitching. So it, I mean, so at a certain point, I finally understood that I think in design is subjective, right? So you might think something looks a certain way or you see it a certain way and you think it's supposed to be interpreted a certain way, but it's always good to hear when other people bring up their thoughts about your designs, whether they say it's trash or whether they breathe life into it like that person did where they were saying like, oh, no, I see it this way. You're like, oh. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Was
write that one down. That's a good one. I like that. So
I love how simple. It's a simple thing. I think those are the best selling products, right?
Yeah.
The simple things that we may take for granted, but that have so much impact.
Yeah.
Like you're saying, our touch on everything and our perception of what that means is important. So, man, I like it. It's dope.
Thank you.
I'm rocking it. So I have a question, or not a question, I don't know, it's a statement, and you're probably going to have a response, is that, you know, you said you had a rough upbringing, single parent household, you went to college and you were in an underprivileged program to where you are now at a certain level of success, right? You've done what a lot of people who were in your situation probably couldn't do.
Yeah.
What do you credit that to, and what advice can you give to people who may be where you're at? Where you were at.
I mean, just my upbringing in general, like in Detroit, I did see a lot of stuff growing up, even though I was really young when I left. Like, I left when I was 9. But even at that point, like, I think they say, you know, you have your personality or you know who you are when you're like around 5 or 6. I even seen that like on this little Japanese show where the parents will send their kids to the store to go like buy eggs and milk and stuff like that. But it's different, obviously different right. society. Like we don't do that here because you know.
We can't do that here, can't unfortunately. Do that here.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I credit it to like just my upbringing because like even my big granny, she would send me to the corner store to get stuff. She would call them up, be like, hey, like Randall's coming to the corner store, he's getting milk, eggs, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't know that part until later. I thought I was going up there by myself. Probably wouldn't have been smart anyways.
Right.
Get jacked for milk. I can't imagine, but I'm sure it would happen. But I would just like think that those things like that, just the upbringing portion. I think my mom instilled in myself, like I'm the first child. So, you know, sometimes I feel like there's like guardrails set on that first kid because it's your first one. You don't know specific things. Even if you have a niece or a nephew, it doesn't matter. Like, it's your child, so you're trying to like keep them alive. And so I think, yeah, maybe she had that a little bit, but she also instilled in me some very important like self-motivators, like things where I trust myself, where I feel good about myself. Like I'm not really worried about too many things. I don't feel like I need to like over introduce myself or overshare on stuff. So I think a lot of it comes from just like my upbringing. Like,
And then advice for people who
are
in that situation looking to get out.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the consistency. Like, so if you can, I think the hardest thing to do for a lot of people is to like really believe in themselves. And it's not just a thing where like because I believe in myself. I definitely trust myself. And I have a lot of confidence, but it's not really an outwardly thing that I display. But inside I definitely have it. But I think that people have to find a way to get to that point where they're doing things and they trust themselves. Like you don't need to have this fear or imposter syndrome. Some people said that today. Not gonna say any names.
Yo, I was like, I didn't want to look. I was like,
not gonna say any names, even though they're really good at what they do in all aspects. But it happens though, because other people put that negativity on you. So if you can have a way to really believe and trust in yourself, I don't have imposter syndrome per se, but I don't like to share a lot. I don't like to overshare stuff. And that doesn't mean my knowledge. Like, I definitely would love to share knowledge, but I just mean if I'm doing something, like what Joy said, I told Karina earlier, I'm not a marketing person. I don't know how to market and sell myself. A lot of the things I don't.
I was thinking about that. I'm like, this should be selling. You know what I mean? Like,
But
just based off of who you are. Like, and people don't know that. Like, you wouldn't even know exactly who you are by looking at your Instagram.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, what does he actually do? Like, does he just like shoes? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And that's why I was like, we talked and you told me everything, but like actually seeing it, right? And, you know, we live in a visual world. You're a creative. That's what it's about, is like actually seeing everything that you've created. It was like, oh, this is crazy. like you're a genius in your area, right?
Thanks.
Like, and it was probably the thing that's held me back from opening the doors that are opening in my life right now, was this. I didn't want to be in front of the camera. All my training and all that stuff, like, I should have been posting all my stuff, all my years, my program is literally one of a kind and has produced some of the top players in Southern California and has a huge impact over 500 kids over the last 10 years, like probably more than that, like crazy. And then even the adults who were on part of my team, like what they're doing now is like literally crazy, but it's not documented.
Yeah.
It's very like, we have video pictures, but it's not documented. And I'm like, I get to talk about it on here now sometimes, but that was my point, is like, I had to find a way to get out of my comfort zone of staying off the camera and make this like, okay, I could be on the camera, but this is about you today. But in turn, I'm able to get this stuff off because it's important for people to hear, and people understand who I am better, and I get to understand who people are better, and gaining that confidence that you know, I'm a host. Yeah. Like, you know what? Yeah, I'm a podcaster. I'm a host. Like, when I go into certain spaces, and sometimes I'm a basketball dude, but something, y'all know I got a podcast. Like, yeah. Oh, you do? Like, that's who I am. Yeah, I can do this.
Yep.
And I want to be a host. I want to host TV shows. Like,
I mean, you got
I want to be another light-skinned dude like Speedy. You know what I'm saying? Like, we could do this. And
you got to get Speedy on here.
Man, hey, Speedy, listen. You know what I'm saying? Hey, come through. Is he a hooper?
He did hoop. He was top in his middle school, then he didn't grow taller. So he went to like some small school that was for like elite, how would it be his code? But he didn't get taller, so he just kind of gave up.
And see, my producer even knows all about you, Speedy. Oh, hey, look at man, look out for your light skin, boy. Man, when you come to LA, come and elevate your game, dog. No, like what you're saying, and it's the reps.
Yeah.
Right? We started this with, I had an event and I was just interviewing coaches. I was like, oh, this is kind of fun.
Yeah.
And then like people were like, oh, are you going to do this again? Are you going to do this more? And I was like, let's do a podcast.
Yeah.
And my first guests are probably the biggest guests, popularity wise, than any of them. And I had no idea what I was doing. Like, if you go back, there was no structure to the show. I was literally just free flowing and talking. Now there's like structure to it a little bit more.
Oh, yeah,
and you know what I mean? Like, and now I know what I'm looking for. I did, and I studied. I think this is the piece.
Yep.
People want to be great at something, or they don't have confidence at something, and they're just trying to figure it out on their own.
Yeah.
Man, I studied the greats. Like, I go watch all the nighttime interviewers and understand how to interview people. I watch numerous episodes of Oprah, and like, for real, like yeah. I'm trying to look at the best interviewers and get what they do. My guy, Steve Bartlett, who does Diary of a CEO, like, yo, let me figure this out, because I want to be great at it. You know what I mean? So, and you've been able to do that, like study under one of the greats of our time in this space, and the confidence. And like you said, man, that strong upbringing, like your relationship to your parent or parents is so important in her instilling that confidence in you to have self-confidence, especially in the social media generation.
Yeah, for sure.
People feel strong about themselves. What the outside world says will not matter. Yeah. And that's what we have to do to our kids. Not teach them how to shoot, tell them to score more buckets. It's about giving them the confidence to be themselves, that whatever else is happening around them doesn't impact them in a negative way.
Yeah.
They see it, they observe it, and say, that's not for me, or that is for me. And I think that's so important, man. So shouts out to moms.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the big one right there. Because like, even going in different spaces, like I think the first year of college, I didn't even drink. Man. I was at a party school. Like, it was literally a party school.
Yeah, university.
Number one.
Yeah.
I was just like, I'm not going
on the stage number one, though. Is this not
now true? They are. I think they are now. But it's crazy because they don't win anything. I don't remember last time they won.
They were top ranked in football this year.
That's you said top ranked. I'm talking about winning championships. We haven't done it in a while either, but still.
Hey, you got,
go Gators.
You have some, though. Love it, man. Love it. Man, thank you for the journey, man.
That's dope, man.
And go get you some joy shed. Y'all, like, what are we talking about here?
Absolutely.
So we'll make sure we have the links to the website. Support this black king and his business,
appreciate
man. Like, and he got more stuff coming. I'm waiting for these hoodies.
Yeah.
All right, man, we're going to get to the next part of the show.
All right.
My Rushmore, okay? Your top four design shoes of all time. Like, it doesn't necessarily be individual pair, but like the brand who has the best shoe designs all time. And you could say Yeezy since you were a part of it, just to be clear, but yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so four brands.
And not in any order.
Definitely not in any order. I'm just going to say, because I'm, you know, off the top still. For sure, Yeezy. I mean, I just have to say it. Not only being a part of it, just visually, it was creating something new. And I think there was a few shoes that we, like, took inspiration from the Adidas side to then, like, kind of recreate. But a lot of it was brand new.
Yeah.
Designs, brand new models.
I couldn't even get used to it. I'm too old to like Yeezys. I ain't gonna lie. Like,
it's there's some pairs. There's some pairs that you would just like.
The hoop shoes, I actually like. Oh, okay, those is cool. I didn't wear Adidas. I don't really wear Adidas hoop, so I was like, eh.
But
Yeah. Huh?
A Nike guy.
Yeah.
I think most. Yeah.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah.
So Yeezy for sure. I don't know. I think it's interesting because I'm wearing some these like Oakleys, and I think.
I thought that's what those were. I'm like, yo, are those like the glasses brand Oakley?
Yeah,
I didn't know they were had clothes as well.
Yeah, they have apparel and footwear, and they're bringing some more stuff back out now. And I do think Oakley had this like, they had a little run, I want to say late 90s, early 2000s, or mid 2000s, whatever, where they were making like really interesting footwear. So I'm going to have to put them in there just because it's like a weird sleeper.
Yeah.
Two more is really tough. I'm trying to find some ones that aren't on everybody's list, but I'm just have to be realistic with myself and put Nike. I need to lump Nike and Jordan in together though. Oh,
okay. That's fair because it's only four. I got it. I'll let it go. We'll let it go.
I don't know though.
They're two different brands, but yes.
I don't know. Maybe I can't do it then. I might need to separate them because Jordan,
Jordan's different, man.
Yeah.
They're just different.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to separate them. So I'm gonna put Nike and Jordan in there separately. It's really hard because there's a lot of other brands that are really good, but Nike and Jordan it's just like really hard to compete with those. Just Nike has like not only their old school running, but their ACG, which is like their outdoor stuff. And then Jordan brand, I mean, he was the first to ever do it, you know, being able to create his own brand and his own footwear. And then a lot of like the people that I look up to and that have mentored me, like Dr. Dwayne Edwards, Jason Maiden, Wilson Smith, like E. Scott, they all worked in that time where they were creating all of these just amazing products, not only for Jordan brand, but for Nike too. Wilson Smith was creating some of like the craziest Nikes that you've ever seen. Like, you know, the one that has like the air up tempos with the big air on the side.
Yeah.
Like he did those. And then E. Scott did like most of all the Mike Vicks. And these are all black men. They're all crazy, like crazy creatives. And they're knowledge kings where they like to share their knowledge with people. So I'm gonna have to put those in there. Yeah.
Like respectable, I like it. I like the sleeper too. Like I'm gonna go check out Oakley shoes. I like those are something I would wear, and my wife would hate me. Like, what are those? Like, what are you wearing those for? I'm like, they're mad comfortable, and I think they're cute. Like, what are we gonna do with it?
Yeah, he said, edit that out.
No, fault. My bad. So for me, I'm gonna do Jordan first.
Okay,
Jordan just Hooper. Style, comfortability, being able to hoop in them. Like, Jordan just, for me, like if my feet weren't hurting all the time, I would wear more Jordans. It's just all the hoop over the years, right? Next, man, I got some sleepers. Mine are some Stacey Adams. Okay. I'm sorry. Hush puppies. Bruh, just like... dressing up, what you gonna do with it? Like, it's just the OG style, you know, you could wear them to any event and, you know, like, I just love the way they look. Next, here's my sleeper, Creative Rex. Remember Creative Rex?
Yeah.
I love Creative Rex, man. Just, I feel like you can go, eat like, they're casual, but you can kind of get away with them. They have some patent leather styles that you get away with and wearing, like, a more traditional setting, and so... those were my favorite shoes, man. I don't even know if they still make them, but I definitely wore them for years.
Yeah.
Even after everybody else stopped. I don't really care. I'm that kind of guy. lastly, do I have to? Yeah, I got to go Nike.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just too big of a part of my life just from the hoop shoes. Like you said, I wear some nice, what are those joints now? The Pegasuses?
Yeah.
I love them joints. Like, just.
They're on the run.
They've been in my life throughout the years. And so, my honorable mention, though, are the Iversons and under Reebok.
Yeah.
Like, when I was hooping in my middle school. Yeah, man.
Which ones?
All of them. Like, questions to answers. Like, All of them. Like, I literally had every Iverson every year they came out. Oh, damn. And that was my, like, those were my joints. I would still wear them today, I think, if I wasn't, you know, I like wearing Nikes now, so.
Yeah, man, Reebok is definitely some good ones.
They're coming back.
Yeah, oh, they got a bunch. Yeah,
they're coming back on the hoop side and like trying to really build it back out. So
I did see some interesting new ones that I'm trying to think who had them on. Angel Reese. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think she has some new ones.
Yeah, they're sponsoring a bunch of high school kids now with NIL, so they're trying to get back in space. So, and you know, AI is just, he has his big high school all-star thing, so they're really trying to build it back up. Hey. So, fix the net. So, misconception either about you, about basketball, and we're going to add for you just in the creative space that you would like to make straight. So, tell us what it is, tell us the truth about it, and then fix the net.
Okay, so it has I'm doing all three.
No, you can pick one, you can do all three if you have all three.
I don't think there's a misconception about me. I don't think I'm like
cool
that well known or.
Yeah, no, I have some NBA. I have some like basketball coaches in here who.
That makes sense. Yeah. So they definitely need to clear the air. I get that. I think in the creative space though, misconceptions. Might get some flack for this depending on where.
Make sure
this
we post
goes.
This. Go ahead.
Misconceptions. The people that are doing collaborations with brands, I think they're cool. I think it's great. But if they're taking a specific model or a shoe that's already created and just doing a colorway, they're not a designer. They're doing colorways. Mm. And I'm not saying that colorway designers aren't designers, because they are. But they usually have like color theory behind it and things like that. But we should not be labeling them footwear designers when they're doing colorways. Man. That's my misconception. Like that's something where I had to fix.
Just because you coach an AAU game doesn't mean you a coach. Talk to him.
Yeah, that's probably like that's my pick.
Go ahead and fix the net, brother.
I get the.
Yep, dunk, whatever you want to do.
Oh, you know, my
finger roll with the left.
Love that, brother. You know what I'm saying? I'm not even lefty, though. So. All
right, this next spot is where we flip the script. Two questions for me. Could be about anything in the world.
Ooh. This is tough. Because I feel like you answered my design, like one design question I had.
What's that?
But, well, you said you're like top four shoe brands. What's one of your favorite things in fashion right now? Whether it's a person, an item, like a visual.
I'm not into fashion, just to be that's clear. Like I'm very I don't.
You said Hush Puppies, so I like.
Yeah, you know, back in the day, you know. Yeah. I'm into. I just like really nice hoodies, man. Okay. I'm a hoodie guy. Like, my closet is literally 40 hoodies. My wife hates it. Like, get rid of. You're not gonna wear all these. I'm like, I literally wear this at least once a year. I'm not getting rid of it. So very comfortable soft cotton. Yeah, once a year. Soft cotton hoodies that you know, usually have some basketball to them, and or like I could wear this to dinner. Like I like stuff like this where I always lived in a world where like, man, I don't have to wear a suit to get to where I need to be in this world. Like I could wear some Jordans and some hoop shorts and that's the same thing with my hoodies.
Yeah.
I'm gonna even go a little further. Long sleeve hooded shirts are my joints too. I like long sleeve hooded shirts.
Interesting.
Yeah, so hoodies, it's kind of in the same category, just a little thinner, because me and Cali can't wear hoodies all year. I like long sleeve hooded shirts though too. So yeah, that's kind of for me. I'm not big on the fashion. Mm-hmm. I need somebody to help me dress for where I'm headed in this space. Yeah. I know that, like putting this together this morning, this took me 30 minutes. 30 minutes to choose this.
I get it.
You know what I mean? Like, but I didn't, and I still.
I get it.
So listen, man, listen. Listen, since you don't know what a DOH is, or a DHO,
yeah, I'm going to
help you with basketball. You can help me with this clothes game. We'd
be
good.
I said it wrong. Like, I know what a DHO is. Like, I'm usually going off the pick and shooting myself. I'm trying to pass. I'm a passer. Pass first.
There you go.
Point guard, yeah. And then the next question, this is a personal one. Mm-hmm. You have kids. And you're married.
And I'm married.
So how do you keep a consistent, am I allowed to ask this question?
You can ask.
Okay, because this is the information for myself personally, I'll be honest. How do you keep a consistent marriage, like lasting, like dates and stuff? Like what do you do to keep that, like you come home, like, what's up, girl? Like that type of thing.
Man, you have to be intentional. Super intentional, because life will, especially when you have kids. Like before kids, it was easy.
Yeah.
You know, you can navigate life and eat dinner together and a lot of time to be intimate without being physically intimate.
Yeah.
When you have kids, they take so much of your attention and your life is centered around them that you have to take the time to be intentional.
Yeah.
So yesterday's a perfect example is I had a long day. I was tired, like working off of 2.5 hours of sleep.
Oh.
Wifey's car broke down in the morning when she was leaving for work. I had to go to the car dealership. It was a day. It was just a day. I had a student who bust their head open in the weight room. Like, I had a day. And then something else happened. What else happened? I can't remember. Something else happened. And then my wife knew I was tired. Like, she was like, okay, give him the space, let him breathe. And we put the kids down and, you know, usually that's our time to just actually relax.
Yeah.
So we put the kids down, and so one of us puts my son down, and then we both have like a little routine we do with my daughter. Either one of us goes first, and you know, I like read with her and do Spanish and all this stuff, and she reads a book with her, whatever. So she was in there with my daughter first reading a book. So I knew I was acting kind of stank because I was tired. And so I was like, man, what can I do for her that isn't, you know, that's out of the ordinary? And so a few birthdays ago, I bought her a massage table.
Oh, wow.
And so I run to the garage, I get the massage table, and I have it set up. So when she walks out, when I go put my daughter down, and I send her a text message as she's leaving the room, I'm like, hey, get ready for a nice relaxing massage.
Oh, wow.
And all of my tiredness, crankiness, and that's it. It's like doing stuff like that. And it took 20 minutes, right?
Yeah.
And, but it changed her, it changed both of our attitude.
Yeah.
Right? I was in this place of humility and like, yo, I appreciate you. And she was in a place like, I didn't know I needed that. And we cuddled on the couch and fell asleep. Like, you know what I mean? Like it was that intentional, right? Stuff like that. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, it does.
When I'm feeling stressed or in a uncomfortable spot, I give sacrificially.
Okay.
That's the best way I can explain it. When I know that I'm at a deficit, I got to give to her.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I give to her, it keeps happy wife, happy life. That concept is there. Be good friends. There's more to it. So that's the that's one way.
Yeah.
That non-physical intimacy is important. And then secondly, is communication.
Yeah.
We're constantly communicating. We're calling, talking, and it's very playful. We don't take stuff seriously. We are going to be together forever. There's no reason to have super serious conversations about why my socks are on the ground. I put them there. Like, put them in the hamper, right? Don't trip over the little stuff. And we just have constant communication. We even have an app where, like, it asks us a random question every day about our relationship. Super simple. It takes 30 seconds to write an answer, and like our answers are hilarious.
Does the other person see it then?
They have to answer it to see it.
Oh.
And so it's a one question every day, and so it goes back and forth. I think it's called I could say it's good for all couples to have, and it asks like, you know, what was your favorite thing about when you first met? And this brings the old stuff up. Or what do you guys? When's the best time to talk to you when you're mad?
Uh-huh.
And so like we're answering these questions, right? And our answers are off the wall funny because we're both just silly, but it's the truth at the same time. Like, and I didn't expect some of her answers to be the exact same of my answers, but they were. And so just constant communication and ways to just connect without having to physically be there. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, man, we keep it light. And we just love each other, man. We don't think about ever not being together. We don't think about divorce. We don't think about being mad at each other. Mm-hmm. We don't like to argue. We'll stay away from arguments, and we have disagreements, and we'll discuss them for sure. But we just know we're gonna be together forever. So let's make the best of this. I think people have an out with divorce.
Yeah, it's
like, oh, if I don't like it, I could just leave. And I do not believe in divorce. For me and my wife. Some people need to break up.
Oh, Lord.
If they ain't willing to do the work, you know, and the circumstances, like, sometimes I've seen people's lives change from divorce.
For sure.
But overall, if you're in a committed marriage and you're doing what you're supposed to do, divorce shouldn't even be an option.
Yeah.
And so when you get married, know that you can take all that person's funkiness and their worst state of mind, if that has to do with the way they smell, their mental health, their crazy family, you know, their emotion, like any of that, like make sure you can handle them in their worst for 5 years without thinking about breaking up with them.
For sure.
You know what I mean? Like that's the biggest thing. I knew who she was at her worst and I'm like, oh, I can still do this.
Yeah, it's easy.
I ain't easy.
Oh, yeah. I mean.
No, it is, but yes. Yeah. No, so, I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, no, it did. That was fire. I love that.
Okay, I do. You got a 24-second shot clock. That's your camera right there. Let the people know where they can find you, where they can find your brand, and any message that you have for them.
All right, cool. Randall Yarborough, I appreciate being here. You can check me out on Instagram. I don't really post that much, but I got, you know, posts on my stories, @ray_5. And then also you can check me out on itsjoyshed.com and then follow the Instagram, itsjoyshed.
Dope. Appreciate you coming on. That's all we have for you today, folks. We'll see you next time. Peace.
Thank you.